Ala Lakota Nation, joining us from Atlanta, Georgia. We're also joined by two members of Leonard Peltier's legal defense team. Jennifer Jones is the managing attorney at the law firm For the People, lead counsel for Leonard Peltier's case, joining us from Denver, Colorado. And here in New York, we're joined by Maura Meltzer Cohen, co-counsel on the case, educator and abolitionist. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! I want to begin with Jennifer Jones. For people who have not followed Leonard Peltier's case, I know he's in the Coleman prison in Florida, and he just came out of a number of days in the prison hospital, just turned 80 years old. Explain why he is behind bars and still behind bars after 50 years.
Well, good morning. Thank you, Amy, for having me on. And that is quite a question. And a complex question, because it has a lot to do with Leonard. What is keeping Leonard in prison now? I think what's important to clarify is the things that put Leonard in prison, those irregularities, those defects, that the misconduct, are different from the things that are holding him in there today. So the procedures, the conditions of confinement, the law that is being used by the United States Parole Commission, which we assert is the wrong law and therefore in violation of the ex post facto clause to the U.S. Constitution. And that's also consistent with the United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention and their evaluation of Leonard's current detention and incarceration right now. He's an old law prisoner. There's a complex set of laws that are currently keeping him in. And so we've been very clear, myself and co-counsel, that we intend to bring this to court. Leonard's case has not been reviewed by a court in over a decade. And yet there are still matters, substantive matters, that have not been raised in his case. And we intend to do that, including the medical issues, other treaty violations and due process, serious due process issues that are causing him to be bound within the carceral system at this point, though he is 80 years old, reliant on a walker, has severe diabetes and a host of other health conditions for which he should not at all be incarcerated at this time. And apart from the fact, notwithstanding the fact that Congress did not intend for Leonard to be, or any prisoner convicted at that time of the offense, to be incarcerated in this particular manner.
I spoke to Leonard Peltier on the phone from prison in Florida in 2012 during the Obama administration. Leonard, this is Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!
Hi,
I'm good. I was wondering if you have a message for President Obama.
I just hope he can, stop the wars that are going on in the world and stop getting, killing all those people getting killed and, give the Black Hills back to my people and turn me loose.
Can you share with people at the news conference and with President Obama your case for why you should be, your sentence should be commuted, why you want clemency?
Well, I never got a fair trial, for one. They wouldn't allow me to put up a defense and manufactured evidence, manufactured witnesses, tortured witnesses. The list just goes on. So I think I'm a very good candidate for after 37 years for clemency or house arrest, at least.
So that was Leonard Peltier in 2012. In November 2000, on Election Day, I had a chance to interview then-President Bill Clinton, who'd called into our radio station, Pacifica Station WBAI, to get out the vote for Hillary for Senate and Al Gore for president. I used the opportunity to ask him about the case of Leonard Peltier.
President Clinton, since it's rare to get you on the phone, let me ask you another question. That is, what is your position on granting Leonard Peltier, the Native American activist, executive clemency?
Well, I don't have a position I can announce yet. I believe there is a new application for him in there, and when I have time after the election's over, I'm going to review all the remaining executive clemency applications and see what the merits dictate. I will try to do what I think the right thing to do is based on the evidence.
So that was almost a quarter of a century ago. Maura Meltzer-Cohen, your co-counsel on the case, you attended the parole hearing in July. Talk about the significance of this.
Well, Leonard had not had a full reconsideration hearing for parole, I believe, since 2008. We put together a comprehensive parole submission for him. We were really committed to getting all of the evidence before the parole commission. And just to give you a sense of this, his parole submission was two volumes. It was nearly 500 pages, or a little over 500 pages. And of course, it included not only letters of support and assurance from his friends and family and supporters, but many, many letters from experts, including, of course, a doctor and a social worker, his spiritual advisor, but also from historians, sociologists, criminologists, experts on aging in prison, experts on the history of the case. We had a really beautiful letter on the ways in which his continued confinement far from his ancestral lands is a violation of not only treaty law, but religious free exercise rights. We included letters from people who had lived through the Reign of Terror on Pine Ridge, not just people who had been present, but former law enforcement. We had letters supporting release from people who had been involved in the original prosecution and appeal, not just his defense attorneys, but people who had represented the government in prosecuting Mr. Peltier about why they had ultimately, if belatedly, determined that he ought to be released. And even the Vatican sent a message of support for his release.
I want to bring Nick Tilson into this conversation, president and CEO of NDN Collective, an indigenous-led organization, usually on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, where the shootout took place. Your parents were at that time there. If you can talk about the history of Leonard Peltier's case, now you're in Atlanta, and the significance of what he has argued all of these years with these two FBI agents coming onto the reservation. The case against Leonard Peltier, he has always denied that he killed these two FBI agents in a shootout.
I mean, I think the most important thing to remember, or for people to understand, is there was a war happening on that side at that time. And the United States government was arming one side of that battle. And there was hundreds of agents in and out of Pine Ridge during that time. Those agents came up to the camp in 1975 with aggression at a time in which people were being killed for standing up for indigenous people's rights. The conditions at that time were directly related to why his co-defendants were originally let off. Dino Butler, Bob Robidoux. And they were let off because of reasons for self-defense and because of the climate that was happening at that time on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And the United States government and the Federal Bureau of Investigation were engaging in a counterintelligence war to shut down the American Indian movement and the indigenous people's movement at that time because it was building power and it was becoming a threat to the United States, and it was holding up the mirror of what happened to indigenous people throughout history. It was in that climate, in those conditions, in which the shootout happened.
And explain where Leonard Peltier was, why he wasn't tried at that time and could well have been acquitted with the other two.
He was in Canada at the time. He had evaded to Canada. And while he was in Canada, The United States government engaged in an illegal extradition from Canada, and they coerced witnesses, and they provided falsified documents to the Canadian government. And those falsified documents, the coerced witness, it was later found out that, of course, those were contributed to the illegal extradition of Leonard Peltier from Canada back to the United States. But they continued his prosecution anyway.
And talk about who Leonard Peltier was and is, Nick. His significance in the community, his standing back then in 1975, and what he's been able to do from prison right through to now, and then want to ask about the lockdown.
Well, Leonard Peltier was an organizer and an activist of the American Indian Movement that helped fight for the Native American Freedom of Religion Act, that helped fight for the Indian Self-Determination Act, that we're fighting for many of the things that we are beneficiary of today as Indigenous people. And they were fighting for liberation of people and the rebuilding of Indigenous nations. Also, he was doing so, organizing as a boarding school survivor, raising awareness about what was happening in at that time in Indian country. And so, he created the conditions, many of the things that we benefit from today throughout Indian country, but he has never been able to benefit from them himself. Now, from prison, he has been a writer. He has helped raise money and awareness around Indigenous issues. He has continued to maintain his position as a human rights leader and bringing light to what's happening to Indian people, even from prison. And today, you know, he is one of the most world-renowned Indigenous human rights advocates, and he's been doing that from prison. He has stayed his course, he has stayed strong, and he has helped bring light to Indigenous issues, not just on Pine Ridge in the United States, but around the world. And so he is revered by Indian country as a leader, and it would mean the world to have him come back and have him released from prison. And I think it would absolutely be part of the legacy of the Biden administration and its relationship to Indigenous peoples of this land.
Is there any indication, and I'll put this question to all three of you, whoever wants to take it, of what Biden, I mean, I was asking President Clinton a quarter of a century ago if he's weighing clemency. He said, yes, we're looking at this. Maura, do you have any indication from the Biden administration right now?
I have not been in touch with the Biden administration. I think Nick may have a better sense of that.
Nick Tilson.
Where it's at right now is there's a pending application. There's a pending application to move forward for executive clemency. And President Biden could act on that any day. He could act on it any day. If we're going to sit here and think about the political landscape, the biggest likelihood of him doing executive clemency will happen after the election, before the inauguration. So during that time is the absolute time that we have to build up the pressure and put the pressure on him. And so at that time, we'll have more of an indication of what's happening. You know, we're maneuvering. The FBI is one of the biggest challenges right now is because the FBI continues all of these, you know, five decades later, it's continuing their effort to keep Leonard Peltier in prison. And so we have to rise up and, you know, hope that the president of the United States has some courage, some compassion to do what is right and to release Leonard Peltier through executive clemency.
And Jennifer, if you could talk about the lockdown right now, Jennifer Jones, lead counsel for Leonard Peltier.
Yes, absolutely. These lockdowns have been chronic and consistent, particularly for the last 4 years of Leonard's incarceration. They are called modified operations by the Bureau of Prisons. But what it means for Leonard, someone who is an elder, who is medically vulnerable, it means that he does not get the diabetic food that he needs, the exercise that he needs, the religious services that he requires, and he is locked down for 22 hours a day, only allowed to take a shower. But it's uncharacteristic right now because I've not heard from him in over 7 days. And that is concerning. Obviously, it is heartbreaking because he is sitting in lockdown on his 80th birthday, or was sitting in lockdown on his 80th birthday. And really, this is a form of solitary confinement and a means of hastening death by incarceration. All of these different characteristics of Leonard's incarceration are, in fact, means of death by incarceration. So we wholly object to the lockdowns. We believe that Leonard, and we have requested a medical transfer. It is wholly inappropriate for him, for many reasons, notwithstanding his medical reasons, for him to be at USP Coleman 1, sitting in lockdown, reliant on a walker at 80 years old.
Well, Jennifer Jones, as well as Nick Tilson, Jennifer Jones and Maura Meltzer-Cohen are co-counsels. Jennifer is lead counsel on the Leonard Peltier case. I want to thank you all for being with us. But I wanted to ask Jennifer to stay with us for 1 minute so I can also ask you about the federal jury verdict in Florida that's found members of the Pan-Africanist group, Uhuru 3, guilty of conspiring with the Russian government to sow discord and interfere in U.S. elections. Activists with the African People's Socialist Party facing up to 5 years in federal prison. They're going to appeal. Prosecutors arguing the group's activities were not protected by the First Amendment, since they were done, they say, at the direction of a Russian operative. The defense arguing the government aimed to censor the group after members criticized U.S. foreign policy. Jurors acquitted three of the activists, known as the Uhuru 3, on more serious charge of acting as agents of a foreign government. Jennifer Jones, the significance of this verdict.
Yes, absolutely. The trial of the Uhuru 3 is proving to be one of the most important First Amendment cases thus far in the 21st century. And though the verdict appears to be inconsistent in some ways, it demonstrates that the First Amendment is a viable defense to such accusations of being foreign agents when exercising First Amendment rights. And it should signal to the government that juries will not so easily leap to convict Americans or anybody else in these political or politicized prosecutions. But at the same time, because the Uhuru 3 was found guilty of the lesser charge, it also shows it isn't necessarily penalty-free, and that conspiracy laws, which are often broad and confusing to juries, are still being used to traffic folks who are not guilty of the underlying offense, yet by conspiracy convictions are on the road to prison or punishment nonetheless. And so it is a bittersweet verdict, which everyone should be aware of, because it remains clear that when covert government repression tactics fail against activists, the government will use the overt means of charges and cages against folks who simply they disagree with.
Jennifer Jones, a part of the Legal Support Committee for the Uhuru 3, and also lead counsel for Leonard Peltier. Coming up, how we do freedom, rising against fascism. We'll speak with V, the playwright formerly known as Eve Ensler, about the day at the Judson Church planned for Saturday. Stay with us.
Here in the dark, everything that once was becomes a tiny spark. Looking back from the next century, what do they see? The names of the girls who laid the stones, names long forgotten, never scribbled in the tomes, but they were strong and indestructible. Their hearts were full. Now the edifice of women's liberty, it is almost complete. Protected and serene, the rich women still are honing their malevolent skills, growing bolder in their treachery, selling for free. They are those
Daughters by Aoife O'Donovan. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. A day-long event scheduled at Judson Memorial Church here in New York City Saturday is called How We Do Freedom, Rising Against Fascism. Speakers, poets, artists, activists will be crowding into the church, billed as a discussion on the way fascism impacts everything from, quote, women's bodies to anti-blackness to suppression of LGBTQ plus and the disabled to the banning of books, erasing history and immigration bans, union busting, increasing violence and expansion of the police state and the destruction of the earth. End quote. The event is organized by V-Day, One Billion Rising, and Judson Memorial Church. We're joined right now in the studio by V, the playwright formerly known as Eve Ensler, founder of V-Day and One Billion Rising, global activist movements to end violence against all women, gender-expansive people, and the earth. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. This is an event that spans the globe. People will be talking about fascism from India to the United States.
Exactly. I thank you so much for having me this morning. When we had our gathering of our global council of 1 billion rising in Rome in June, which we do every year, we kind of determine what's going to be the issue of the year and what are the most pressing issues women are facing. And it was unanimous within a half an hour that the rise of fascism from India to Italy, from Afghanistan to U.S. was the most pressing concern everywhere. And I think this day, which I'm very excited about, we have a range of the most brilliant philosophers, thinkers, activists, artists, all who are going to be responding, telling stories, presenting theories, artistic responses to those theories, and hopefully inviting everybody into a deep exploration of what is fascism here, everywhere, and how we build a movement that can resist it.
I want to play a clip that you have highlighted. Dalton Clodfelter, host of the Right Dissident program, he was speaking in 2022.
People say, well, I'm sort of like, you know, I'm like the 1920 feminist. You know, I believe women should have the right to vote, et cetera, et cetera. No, that was evil, too. That was terrible. Our country started really going down the pooper once women got the right to vote. That's evident. The facts of the matter are women are dumber than men. Women should be subservient to men. Women have no place in male activities. Women have no place if partaking in the workforce. Women have no place if partaking in politics. Women have no place outside of the home. The home is a virtuous place for women. Women should be happy when they are in the home. Women should be grateful when a man puts a roof over her head.
That's Dalton Clodfelter, host of The Right Dissident. How alone is he, or what movement is he a part of?
Well, it's hard to tell the numbers, but he's certainly represented by J.D. Vance, who is running for vice president. We're seeing a very strong push from the right wing to make sure that, let's just look at abortion rights and the fact, what we've seen over the last year. I read this statistic recently that 64,000 babies were born last year to rape women who could not get abortions. That's in America. Right? We're seeing the pushback of women back into the, quote, family, back into the home, the idea that women should now have the vote removed. That, and I think we're seeing this actually across the world, this repression of women. I mean, one of the women at our gathering and who we'll hear from during the event on Saturday, the oppression of women in Afghanistan is the extreme, most extreme form of oppression. It's kind of the end of women, period. You can't go out, you can't speak, you can't laugh, you can't have jobs, you can't do anything essentially but have babies and be quiet, right? And I think there is a Talibanic movement in this country that would like to see women in the very same place. And I think part of what we know is that when women's rights are threatened in such a perilous way, it's representative of all of our rights being oppressed in a similar kind of way. So I think the day is really looking at, like, one panel, for example, is looking at the body, right? The oppression of transgendered women's bodies, the oppression of disabled women's bodies, the oppression of obviously pregnant women's bodies and our right to determine whether we have babies or we don't have babies. But it's also across the board, whether it's the scapegoating of migrants and immigrants, as we've seen with this mad, I don't even want to repeat it. It's so ludicrous. But the lies that are being told, the plans for expulsions of millions of people in vicious and violent ways. I think what we all have to do now is really come together to think deeply about what are these rising fascistic impulses that have been here all along in this country. They're certainly not new to Black or Indigenous people who have lived forever in that kind of precarity, but they are spreading and they are deepening. And with Project 25, the kind of outline of this policy Bible, which is literally spelling it out, you know, beat by beat, we need to be prepared with our own Project 25 as a counter proposal.
V, I wanted to ask about your piece in The Guardian titled "The Forces of Loneliness Can Cause Political Instability." Explain.
Well, I think one of the things Hannah Arendt always talked about is that loneliness is often a precondition for fascism. It feeds off of it. And because people are lonely and they want to attach themselves to things, then they want to kind of find a cult or a way of belonging. And I think, you know, in 2023, the Surgeon General came out and said that the greatest mental health crisis facing America was loneliness. And if we look at the combination of neoliberal capitalism and the pandemic, and now this ongoing everyday malevolence coming from mendacity coming from the right wing, I think it's pushed people into a powerful state of isolation, loneliness, where they're facing ongoing anxiety, dread, a feeling of not being wanted, a feeling of having to prove themselves and their right to be here. And it's created mad isolation and mad disconnection. And I think one of the anecdotes to fascism we know is community, is solidarity, is coming together, is talking, is being part of something that is bigger than yourself, where you are protected, where each of us stands for each other's rights. And I think, you know, one of the things I tried to say in this, in the piece about loneliness is that it's up to us now to create a movement that is so powerful and so strong and so welcoming and so inclusive and so interdependent that loneliness vanishes and we become strong in our numbers.
So one of the things about this event is not only the critique of fascism, but developing the strategies on dealing with it. And what do you think are among the most important global strategies in this last 30 seconds?
Well, I think one is to recognize that it's a global problem. And to see this as something that's happening through the rise of strongmen everywhere, right? The expulsion of immigrants and escaping, the hatred of women and the destruction of our rights and LGBTQ, the erasing of history, the religious nationalism. And I think one of the greatest strategies, I think, is educating ourselves, knowing what it is. I often bring up the world and people don't know what fascism is. So part of this day is, what is it? And once we know what it is, then we begin to know how to deal with it and how to create an alternative to it.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. V, playwright formerly known as Eve Ensler, founder of V Day and 1 Billion Rising, the event at the Judson Memorial Church in the Village on Saturday, How We Do Freedom, Rising Against Fascism. That does it for our show. We have job openings. You can check them out at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable team. Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Gezder, Sharif Delgadous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Tammy Warnock, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, Hannah Elias, our executive director, Julia Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
If you're a Canadian Indigenous student considering many life choices about your future, Inspire can help. If you need ideas about possible education or career path options specifically for First Nations, Métis, and Inuit folks like you, join Inspire's mentorship program, Rivers to Success. It's free to register, and you'll get plenty of up-to-the-minute information about university, college, and vocational trade schools. Most importantly, again, it's free. It's free, it's free, it's free. It's online, and we have monthly events with prizes. Discover the many potential job and study opportunities that are waiting for you across Turtle Island. Register online now at riverstosuccess.ca Again, that's riverstosuccess.ca.